Good morning and welcome to Ask the Pastor on the Messenger of Good News, Worldwide, KFUO. KFUO is a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod. I'm Roland Lettner. Thanks for being with us this morning. Thank you again to Dr. Victor Raj from here at Concordia Seminary, launching us into our Christmas study of the Book of Joshua. And if you're still wondering, why are you doing the Book of Joshua at Christmas time? Tune in. This will become abundantly clear as that date approaches. But yet, we are still in the season of Advent. Blessed Advent to you, my friend. Pastor Charles Hendrickson is here, joining us from St. Matthew and Bon Terre and
Redeemer in Potosi.
And you're still doing both those gigs, yes?
I sure am, yes.
Now, have you decided that these are going to be permanent calls, or are you still sort of
helping out with one? Well, a call is always permanent. So unless the Lord were to call you to somewhere else, that's where you are.
Hey, if you look behind you, there's a case of water there if you'd like to get a bottle of water. Just in case. It's that time of year, it's inside, outside, you dry out. It's always good. Yeah. So we've got a whole case of water in here. Well, a very important, I'm going to call upon your Swedish heritage here for a moment.
Okay, yeah.
We talk about
things. Jag är svensk.
Yeah, we talk about things hither and yon, all German from time to time, but with a Swedish back. What, you're Swedish on what side of the family?
Well, three quarters.
I'd say that's qualifying.
My father's parents were born in Sweden and came over, and then on my mother's side, my maternal grandmother was Grace Rambo, and all the Rambos. Rambo's a Swedish name.
Really?
One of the very first Swedes to come over to America was a man named Peter Gunnarsson from Gothenburg. He's my 13th generation grandfather. And they landed in Wilmington, Delaware in, 1640.
Wow. Yeah, yeah.
And his name Gunnarsson, everyone was Andersson, Gunnarsson, Pettersson. He decided to make up a new name for the new world. He came from the section of Gothenburg called Ramberget. Ramberg means Raven's Mountain. So he took the Ram of Ramberg, put a bo on it, which means like where you live or reside, and made up the name Rambo.
Hmm.
That's an interesting story. Now, he brought over with him to the New World some seeds for apples, growing apples. That variety became very popular. It became called the Rambo apples, the Rambo apple. And in the late 1960s, it just so happened there was a writer writing an adventure story about a Vietnam veteran. His wife came home. He didn't have a name for his lead character yet. Hmm. His wife came home with a bag of apples. He asked her what kind of apples they were, and she said they're called Rambo apples, and he liked the name Rambo, and that's how you got the movie character. It's actually a made-up Swedish name.
Played by an Italian guy.
Yeah. The connection, I guess, would be Philadelphia, because Peter Rambo settled in Philadelphia.
Yeah, we know the connection to the Rocky films with Philadelphia. Yeah.
So I'm a Rambo from the very first Swedes to come to America, and I'm a Henriksen from my grandparents.
So if I were to ask you, why is December 13th an important day in Sweden, you would tell me?
Santa Lucia Day. Now, in the old calendar, I guess that would correspond to the darkest day of the year, shortest day of the year. And there was a legend about this Italian saint, Saint Lucia, who was a martyr. And during some time of famine in Sweden, somebody had now this is legendary stuff. I mean, I'm not saying this actually happened, but there was a famine in Sweden, and somebody had this vision of this maiden. I guess through Christianization, they'd heard about Santa Lucia, and had this vision of her sort of like walking across a lake with some food, and her hair was like on fire. I mean, but it was candles burning on her hair. Like a headdress with candles, and she had a white gown and a red sash, red for the color of martyrdom, and she was bringing food to the poor people in Sweden. And so the Swedes commemorated Santa Lucia, and there's a tradition in a Swedish household on December 13th that the young daughter would go and serve breakfast to her parents in bed with a Lucia costume. And my daughter has kind of outgrown that. She's done that a couple of times. And so there are some traditions associated with that. I'm in the Swedish Council of St. Louis, and we just had our annual Lucia Fest, our Swedish Christmas program, this past Saturday. I'm in the Swedish chorus and so forth, and they have a pageant like with a Lucia queen in her court, and they march in and they sing the traditional songs. So it's very nostalgic.
Did your Santa Lucia actually have real candles? Or have
she had real candles.
So the safety Nazis have not caught up with your celebration
No.
yet.
Now, the younger girls, they have these like electrical, you know, battery-operated candles on their head. But the real deal is with the flaming hair.
So it's almost like putting an Advent wreath on your head.
It kind of is. And, you know, now up in the northern reaches and the northern latitudes, I mean, those days can get very short in the winter. So it's the light coming into the northlands there. But so that's kind of, now they do Advent, and actually in Sweden, Christmas goes an extra week till St. Knut Day.
Really?
Instead of ending January 6th with Epiphany, it goes till January 13th. King Knut wanted to extend the Christmas season, so he added a week to it.
So that's good to be the king.
St. Knut's Day. And so there's a lot of, I grew up with all the Swedish, we had lutefisk every Christmas Eve. My grandmother made, you know, a lot of people hate lutefisk. They call it the piece of cod that passes all understanding.
prepared with lye to preserve it?
Yeah, and my grandmother, you get it, like, it's like, it was peasant food. And so they preserve it in lye, and it's like stiff like a board.
Yeah, yeah.
And to prepare it, my grandma would soak it in a bucket of water for days to get the lye out of it, and then it becomes sort of this gelatinous mess, and you serve it on Christmas Eve. And I enjoyed it. I mean, my grandmother made some nice sauces for it, and it was the menu.
There was a cooking program last Christmas, I remember I watched with the kids, where they were in Sweden. It was Christmas, you know, celebrations around the world. And I don't know what this one was anticipating out of lutefisk.
The Norwegians call it lutefisk. The Swedes call it lutefisk.
And, you know, you can see the first bite go in.
Yeah.
And the expression, it appeared to be not what she expected it might be.
Either hate it or you love it.
It was like head cheese.
Yeah, something like
that. You know,
like
I still remember my parents making their own head cheese.
Man, these cultural traditions that our people, you know, that people brought over from the old country. I mean, if you're of a certain age, you kind of grew up with them.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO, at KFUO.org. I thank you for that, because even though we probably should have saved this for the 13th, since your heritage is Swedish, I wanted to
bring
this
up. I'm one of the rare
up.
Swedes in the Missouri Synod. I actually started out in the Swedish Augustana Synod in Chicago, the Swedish capital of America, and so many of the Swedes were moving out to the suburbs when I was a kid. Our Augustana congregation disbanded. The next closest Lutheran church was a Missouri Synod church. They had a school, and that's how I ended up in the Missouri Synod.
Well, Sweden has a connection to my family extended, because a lot of Latvians who fled the Russians went to Sweden.
Yeah, the Baltic area.
Yeah, a lot of the Balts did, and there's a Swedish island very close to the Latvian coast, where the expats would get together for a Latvian song festival every year and set up these huge speakers. This was the time of the Iron Curtain, and broadcast all this patriotic and freedom music across the ocean, across the Baltic Sea, into, you know, Soviet-occupied
Latvia. Kind of like Gustavus Adolphus going into Germany to rescue the Reformation.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Hey, do you think that we're up on Christmas pretty well as a people? Do you think we really know what it's all about?
It depends who you're talking about.
Well,
I mean, generationally, I think we're losing it. Now, you know, I've thought about this, too. You know, being a baby boomer, you know, most of what we associate with Christmas, American Christmas, popular Christmas, is nostalgic memories from the baby boom years.
Oh, yeah.
Post-World War II, you know, White Christmas. A lot of those Christmas, you know, Rudolph and all these things, Frosty, those were written mostly during the baby boom years, 46 through 64, and we had our TV specials and the Christmas movies, and a lot of the Christmas songs, ironically, were written by Jews.
Yeah, Irving Berlin wrote
them. Yeah, yeah. You know, and I like some of that, too. Like my favorite Christmas movie is called The Bishop's Wife.
Ah, Cary Grant, I love it.
And David Niven and Loretta Young.
Yeah,
I really enjoy it. We watch that every year.
Yep.
So I'm all right with that stuff. You know, that was kind of a step away. It's a step away from the real Christmas. But since then, it's devolved into shopping and other things. So
the high sacrament of Christmas.
I mean, how many people actually go to church? I mean, when I'm going to sound like an old man here. When I was a kid,
your fist while you're saying that, will you, please?
Well, we had to put chairs in the aisle of the church on Christmas Eve. It was so packed, and now hardly anybody thinks it's important to go to church on Christmas. So,
well, there's I don't know if you're a fan of Fox News. I glean some audio from them every now and again.
Yeah.
And there's a fellow that works for Bill O'Reilly whose name is Jesse Waters.
I've seen that occasionally.
And he does that man on the street kind of thing.
Yeah.
He did one for Christmas. And this is sort of, here's a couple of minutes of that I cut out of these on the street. Now, this took place at Rockefeller Plaza in New York City. Big Christmas display. Also, this is kind of fun. Listen to this.
Have yourself a merry little Christmas.
What does Christmas mean to you?
Christmas to me, I think, means family.
Being with loved ones.
Being thankful for what you have and being with your family.
You sure that's not Thanksgiving? Where was Jesus born? Jerusalem? Do you know where Jesus was born?
He was born in, I don't know.
Jesus was born in Bethlehem.
Bethlehem.
Now, where is Bethlehem?
Bethlehem is in Pennsylvania.
Jesus is an American?
Yes.
And what was Jesus' profession?
Carpenter.
I believe a carpenter.
Jesus was what?
A baby?
He was like a preacher.
Just
like
a nice, all-around nice guy.
Yeah. He had people skills.
People skills.
Sleigh bells ring.
The three wise men were kings from the east, who saw the guiding star in the night and followed it all the way to Bethlehem, where they paid homage to Jesus and presented him with gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
The three wise men brought gifts, frankincense, myrrh, and something else. I forget what it was.
I believe one was a lamb.
A lamb? Did you guys skip Sunday school?
They saw the star. They were astrologers.
They were astrologists.
They brought frankincense, myrrh, and
baby diapers.
They brought precious.
Precious things.
Precious treasures.
Myrrh.
They brought him gold, frankincense, and myrrh.
Yeah.
Very good.
Baby, it's cold outside.
The Christmas tree originated in Western Germany in the 16th century. It was based on a prop in the medieval play commemorating Adam and Eve, then came over to England and eventually the United States. Do you know what country the Christmas tree tradition came from?
Norway.
United States.
Isn't it from Norway?
The Netherlands.
It's the United States.
Germany.
Germany?
Germany?
You're right.
I don't know. I'm just guessing.
He's right.
I'm German.
You are?
Ancestry, yeah. So
that really hurts that you didn't know that.
It does. It stinks.
Okay. What's that big thing right over there? What do you call that?
A Christmas tree?
I think it's called a Christmas tree. You can call it whatever you like. As long as the people are with their families, there's nothing wrong with it.
They're calling it a holiday tree in Rhode Island.
Oh.
Because they want to be politically correct.
It's a Christmas tree.
It's a Christmas tree.
It's a Christmas tree.
You look so sad.
I love Christmas.
You guys know there's a war on Christmas, right?
No, I haven't heard.
No, you haven't heard of the war on Christmas?
No.
How can you have a war with Christmas?
Exactly.
Santa has a big army.
But they're very little. They're elves.
Yeah.
Jingle bells.
Do you guys like to sing?
I love, yeah.
Calm down.
Jingle bells, jingle bells.
Jingle all the way.
And then from there, it just sort of deteriorates into people not knowing the lyrics to Jingle Bells. That's just how bad we've become as a culture when it comes to Christmas. How do you screw up Jingle Bells? Out loud.
Jesus was an all-around nice guy.
Yeah.
What were some of the other things they said about him?
He had people skills.
People skills, that was it. Jesus, all-around nice guy. With people skills.
That's the Jesus
and
of the 21st
Bethlehem
century.
Bethlehem is in Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it is.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
Not the one he was asking about.
Yeah.
So half right, half credit to that question, I guess. Mm. Now, the phrase that came up near the end of that, which is one we've kicked around a little bit, a question came up from Claire in the last hour about the war on Christmas. We're studying Joshua now, a lot of warfare in Joshua, a lot of sword play and bloodshed and all that fun stuff. What do you make of a war on Christmas?
Well, I think it's that the American civil religion has kind of hit the dustbin. Again, going back to the 50s and early 60s, it was just the American thing to do the Bing Crosby, Andy Williams Christmas. And that's, was the tinsel on the trees and the presents and the things like that. And, the real Christmas kind of got faded in the background. And I think now the secularization has really increased, and the antipathy towards Christianity, which I believe is fueled by antipathy toward traditional public morality. You know, in terms of sexuality and don't tell me what to do and all of that. I think that drives the hatred. I think it's more than a war on Christmas. I think it's a war on Christianity that we're seeing in our culture with the gay marriage propositions and all of that. And I think the American civil religion Christmas and how that influenced the church weakened the church. And so when that... Look, all across the board in our culture, starting, I dated around 1965 when it really took hold, is the anti-authoritarianism, the breakdown of all traditional structures.
Don't
in
trust
America.
Anyone over 30?
Well, yeah. It just in every aspect, government, education, media, religion, all the traditional authority venues sort of fell under attack. And so when you didn't have much substance in your church, you know, that left a vacuum there.
Yeah.
So,
well, when it comes to sort of everything that was traditional being overturned.
Oh, and let me say this. I think also there's this misunderstanding about America of the separation of church and state. That means you cannot say anything Christian or even moral in the public square. That is really a firm idea. You know, like if you oppose abortion, well, therefore you are imposing your morality, your religion on others, as though just moral decisions is exclusive to Christianity. And it's not. I mean, that's a function of the law, not of the gospel.
Pastor Charles Hendrickson is our guest this morning on Ask the Pastor, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ready for some calls?
Oh, yes.
Let's bring them into this. Mary, good morning. You're up first with Pastor Hendrickson.
Hello?
Hello, Mary, it's you.
Oh, okay.
This is
Mary,
your big showbiz break, as they say. Go for it.
Mary, talking about Christmas.
And happy Advent.
Yeah.
Blessed
Advent.
My comment about the war on Christmas idea is that anybody who doesn't want to celebrate Christmas, it seems to me, should forego the gift-giving, including all the stores that don't want to refer to Christmas, all the people who don't want to refer to Christmas, idiots who don't have even the slightest idea of what one might call the generic Christmas story, the birth of Jesus Christ, how you can live in this society and not pick up, you know, the general idea about it is beyond me. But then we're talking about people who don't know what the name of the vice president is and who their congressman is and stuff like that. But yeah. It's just, to me, let's do away with all the gift giving, which is the engine of merchandising in this country now.
Key words here, Mary. Follow the money.
Follow
the money.
That's exactly it. And it seems to me like, okay, why are you giving gifts? And if they don't know why, then stop doing it.
Look, I mean, we can complain about the world till the cows come home.
Mm-hmm.
But the world's going to be the world. So let's be the church. And if people say happy holidays, I say, yes, happy holy days to you, the holy days of our Lord's birth.
And I would like to tell you, Pastor, that our little church in Heron, Illinois, is full on Christmas Eve, and it's about three-quarters full on Christmas morning.
Is your pastor Pastor Henson?
Yes, it is.
Say hello to him. I know him.
I will. Then, if you know Pastor Henson, then you know why the church is full.
Yes.
He's a very good teacher.
Yeah, very good.
And we thank God for him all the time.
And congratulations on your parents giving you the name Mary, a noble name.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. It's nice hearing you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Mary. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Now, we've got about 3 minutes before we have to go to the break. I don't want to start you on something new. I've got some audio from George Will that might shock you, considering he's a fairly conservative fellow, some thoughts that he had this weekend. But when you said, let the church be the church,
yeah,
what does that mean?
You know, we don't always have to be reacting to what the world is doing. We can just go ahead and be who we are. And just smile and be confident and talk about Christ. And, you know, the world's not going to get it. They didn't get it with the really American civil religion when everybody was in favor of, quote, Christmas. And it was a way to actually neuter Christmas. But you had Christmas, but it was neutered. Now they just are throwing rocks at Christmas. Well, all right.
Well, so, how do you figure out what is and is not important about this festival day?
Well, take a look at the name, Christ Mass. That puts it all together. You know, we talk about keeping the Christ in Christmas. Let's keep the Mass. And by that, I don't mean the Roman Catholic errors. I mean the Church's Word and Sacrament service that celebrates the feast of our Lord's Nativity.
Well, if Christmas is a time of peace on earth, goodwill towards men, what kind of peace is it talking about?
Well, it's certainly more than...
Because there ain't a whole lot of it around.
You know, Jesus said, not as the world give I give, not as the world gives, give I unto you, when he speaks about peace. So, like we talked about, the peace that passes understanding, it's more than the cessation of armed conflict in North Africa or in Syria or something like that. It is a peace between heaven and earth. That's what the angels announced. In fact, we just had the first Sunday in Advent reading about Jesus entering Jerusalem. And what did they say?
It said
peace in heaven and glory in the highest. So what the angels sang at Christmas, peace and glory to God in the highest and peace to heaven to men on earth, that was echoed by the pilgrims welcoming Jesus on his entry into Jerusalem when they said, blessed is the king who comes in the name of the Lord, and they again use the term peace and glory. So it's the peace that Jesus establishes through his coming in the flesh to suffer and die in Jerusalem on the cross. Christ came at Christmas so that he could die on the cross for you on Good Friday, to establish peace between heaven and earth, between God and man, in his body on the cross, as it says in Ephesians.
And that's one of the big criticisms of Christmas time, is what you were just talking about, that it's about saying one thing and doing another. It's about mm-hmm. talking a good game when it
yeah.
comes to Jesus, but then going on participating in this national debauch of food and family and shopping and all that stuff.
I like the food. The food and the family. See, you can make an idol out of good things.
Exactly.
It's just putting things in the proper order and perspective. There's nothing wrong with, you know, a lot of those respondents on the O'Reilly show said it's about spending time with the family. Is there anything wrong with spending some good quality time with family? And
I do that on the 4th of July.
Yeah, that's a good thing, and it's a good opportunity.
I do it on my birthday.
People have time off,
yeah.
So it's a good opportunity. You know, nothing wrong with food. I mean, who doesn't like food? So, I mean,
well, I'm not complaining about
nice
that.
A nice ham
trust
or a
me,
turkey
you know?
Or something like that.
Yeah, but that seems that's not the focus of it all.
I know. So it's when the secondary stuff.
If you burn the turkey, Christmas is ruined.
Right. And so the secondary stuff is fine. Just don't let it be the primary stuff. You know.
Can we dial it back though? Is that even a possibility?
Because even
with the war,
you can't control other people.
Yeah.
You can't control other people, but you can control to some extent what you do and what you lobby for with the misses and with the relations. You know.
Yeah. Well, see, the difficulty I see is what happens with Christmas is we're so obsessed with little Jesus, meek and mild, you never get to Easter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd rather have the little baby because, well, babies don't threaten you.
You got to get that incarnation connection, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Why he came in the flesh.
Pastor Charles Hendrickson is our guest this morning. More of the program yet to come. Why don't you join us at 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Try the email. Works great. KFUO at KFUO.org. We'll be right back. Stick around. Good morning. Welcome back to Ask the Pastor on the Messenger of Good News Worldwide, KFUO. Pastor Charles Hendrickson is our guest this morning, and I wanted to get you to this bit of audio here. You know George Will, right?
I know of him, yes.
He's a fairly conservative commentator, and the Supreme Court here recently has decided they're going to take up the issue of gay marriage.
Yeah.
Prop 8 out of California, the Defense of Marriage Act, and George Will had some interesting comments about the fact that not only the Supreme Court was picking this up, but, well, here, you listen to this and tell me what you think about what he has to say and what position this pushed the church in on this issue.
Big news out of the Supreme Court on Friday. They took up two big gay marriage cases, one on the Defense of Marriage Act, which denies federal benefits to couples that are legally married in various states. But perhaps more interestingly, they took up the Proposition 8 case, which banned gay marriage in California, which at least leaves open the possibility that they get to the underlying question whether gay marriage is a guaranteed right under the Constitution.
As part of equal protection. Peter Finley Dunn, great American humorist, created a man named Mr. Dooley, who famously said, the Supreme Court follows the election returns. This decision by the Supreme Court came 31 days after an election day in which three states, for the first time, endorsed same-sex marriage at the ballot box. Never happened before. Maine, Maryland, and the state of Washington. Now, the question is, how will that influence the court? It could make them say, it's not necessary for us to go here. They don't want to do what they did with abortion. The country was having a constructive accommodation on abortion, liberalizing abortion laws. The court yanked the subject out of democratic discourse and embittered the argument. They may say, we don't want to do that. We can just let the democracy take care of this. On the other hand, they could say it's now safe to look at this because there is something like an emerging consensus. Quite literally, the opposition to gay marriage is dying. It's old people.
The opposition to gay marriage is dying. It's old people.
Unfortunately, that's true.
And who goes to church?
Old people.
Old people.
Yeah. I mean, now, the good thing about young people is that they get older. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So if you survey kids in their unmarried people in their 20s, they may not hold the same position when they're married people in their 40s.
Well, you know what this means for the church. This is not an idea that I came up with. I heard this discussed last week on a different program. And it was a secular news program, and the commentator was saying that what will happen if the Supreme Court affirms gay marriage and it becomes the law of the land, the church, Christians, who oppose gay marriage will be seen as the new segregationists.
They'll throw all kinds of labels.
Oh, no, not just the labels, but then with all civil and criminal penalties that follow if you tend to be, you know, a racist.
I've always said that if you want to look at America in 20 years, look at what's happening in Northern and Western Europe, that they are the canary in the coal mine.
Oh, yeah.
And or take Canada, our neighbor to the north, which is a Euro wannabe country. And the hate crimes legislation for a guy like me who might preach in a sermon against homosexuality. So the future does not look bright in that respect. I mean, it's certainly a deterioration. Now, what the Supreme Court will do, I don't know. I mean, here you've got issues not directly related to the pro or con of the morality of it, but in terms of federal, because you heard in the clip about federal workers.
Yeah.
Well, now, and it's not, and it's also then where voters have actually in referenda in three states approved this thing. So, and by the way, I noticed some in George Stephanopoulos's lead up in the question, some inherent bias there.
A few presuppositions.
Yeah. So, who knows where that's going to go? But again, the world's, I mean, we should use our voice. We should vote. We should speak up. We should write, do whatever. And I don't know which way the Supreme Court's going to go on this. They may surprise us. I mean,
They did with Obamacare. The Affordable Health Care Act shocked a lot of people.
As a tax.
Chief Justice.
Yeah. But, I mean, will they defend the Defense of Marriage Act, which was passed by Congress? See, it's complicated by the federal versus state issue here. And what Will was saying was the stupid Roe v. Wade decision creating out of penumbras and emanations something that was, they claim, and that was in Stephanopoulos' Stephanopoulos' comment, who, by the way, used to be a Greek Orthodox altar boy. His father was a Greek Orthodox priest.
Yeah.
But, you know, what was the point? That we're going to be in violation of this. You know, that there's some there's some right to this inherent in the Constitution. I mean, imagine the founders, James Madison, George, imagine them thinking, yeah, let's make sure we put into the Constitution, in the Bill of Rights, a right to kill your babies and a right to sodomize and make those legal. But we won't express it in the Constitution or Bill of Rights. We'll just sort of hide it in there in the language. You know, that was not anywhere on the screen of thought.
Well, thank you, Mr. Lincoln, because this is from where all these problems flow, because it was these United States prior to the Civil War, and then it became singular, the United States. And when you say the Pledge of Allegiance, it says indivisible, which was never the intent.
Well, I'm not going to hang all that on Lincoln.
There's a big part of it that goes to Lincoln, but the issue is that nothing is left up to the states anymore.
Yeah.
Everything is federalized.
There is no confederation. Now we're waxing on my political hobby horse.
Yeah, I know. That's why I was leading up to that. Yeah. And like Will was saying, there was a constructive discussion going on prior to Roe versus Wade. If the court would have left it alone,
well,
you'd have
states,
some states that were pro-life, some that were pro-choice.
And even if what I believe is, even if you don't, regardless of the morality of abortion, you could overturn Roe v. Wade. Really, even if you were in favor of abortion, you should overturn Roe v. Wade because it's a bad constitutional decision. It violates the 10th Amendment. It is the federal government taking away the rights of the states to have their own laws on this matter and creating something out of nothing, ex nihilo, something that is not in the Constitution or Bill of Rights, a right to an abortion.
Yeah.
So even now, back in 1973, I mean, there were very few states that had gone to legalizing abortion. But now, if we overturned Roe v. Wade, which I believe we should, obviously you're going to have a whole lot more states approving abortion, but you would also have a bunch of states that wouldn't have it.
Now, what's interesting, the news account from where I first found this audio goes on to say this about the court. Of course, there is one bit of irony involved if the Supreme Court does decide to rule that gay marriage is a right protected under equal protection cases such as Loving versus Virginia, and that is that if such a decision were to happen, gay rights activists would almost certainly have at least Justice Anthony Kennedy, a Reagan appointee, to thank for the decision, as well as former Bush Solicitor General Ted Olson, who is bringing one of the suits against California's Prop 8. In other words, if the issue does go by the way that gay rights groups want it, it will be because Republicans pushed for it.
Well, you can count on the Supreme Court 9. You can count on 4 liberal votes very consistently. If they get a 5th vote, it used to be Kennedy was the swing vote.
Yeah.
In the Obamacare decision, it was Chief Justice Roberts.
Yep.
So you can count on 4 on the left. And who's going to be if there's going to be a wayward sheep, you know, would it be Kennedy? Would it be Roberts? I don't know.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
It used to be predictable. Now it's absolutely uncertain what may happen. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, KFUO at KFUO.org. Hey, David has written in, based on our discussion about the war on Christmas, the untold story of Christmas is that this people do want a baby Jesus that is nice and would not hurt a fly, quite the contrary for when he comes back.
Yeah, they want that little Jesus meek and mild. Let's send him some diapers for Epiphany. And
if you didn't hear the audio from the first half of the program, that'll make sense when you listen back on MP3. Yeah.
You know, it's a defanged. I mean, it's a Jesus with no law. There is no law to condemn us.
It's Outback Steakhouse. No rules, just right.
Yeah, so why do you need a Savior? This is why you have to always have law and gospel, because if you're not a sinner, why do you need a Savior? And that's why people don't go to church, is because there's no sense of a need.
Hmm. Well, you know, it's the wrong way to look at it, but I think people would commonly see, just the average person would say, well, if I had to pick, Christmas is gospel, Easter is law.
Good Friday, you know, is one's a happy time,
and the other one's a
sad time. Well, the reason Jesus had to come was because of our sins. So you could say there's law and gospel and Christmas, too.
Well, you can't ever separate the
two. You can't. I mean, you have to distinguish them, but you cannot separate them. You know, the whole salvation thing is the need and the solution, which comes in Christ.
Because of all these things, Mary is pondering in her heart, what is one of them?
Well,
Easter.
Yeah, and the sword, and what Simeon says to Mary at the presentation on the 40th day is the sword will pierce your soul, too.
Oh, see, church is such a happy place, isn't it? You know, you have such fun.
Or look at what baby Jesus, I mean, you got Herod trying to slaughter, and it's a massacre, a bloody mess there. And
yeah.
So.
Well, to this issue of gay marriage also comes a story about, the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, is retiring, and there's a new fellow coming to take his place, and he's reflecting back on his career, and he's written a letter to his congregations, and he says, our communion has endured much suffering and confusion, but he added that the church, that would be the Anglican Church, has been privileged to see the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ in different ways within our common life.
What does he mean by that?
Well, as you go on, it says, the truth is that our communion has never been the sort of church that looks for one central authority. And I thought, what? This would mean one central earthly authority?
No,
or one
that's
authority?
The latitudinarianism. There's the 75-cent word of the day. That's the distinctive doctrinal characteristic of the Anglican Church, is to be the big tent. And what binds them is the Book of Common Prayer, and they're being liturgical in a sort of just in a surfacey way. You can find some good stuff. Now Anglican Church, like all of these state churches or formerly state churches in Northern and Western Europe, has just become a liberal, politically correct outfit. So there's not much left there. So
he says, in the work done around evangelism, health care, the environment, the rights and dignities of women and children and of indigenous peoples and many more areas, what drew people together was this halfway formal model of a global community of prayer and concern maintained by deep friendship and common work. I think that goes right to your point that you just made.
That would put me to sleep.
Well, to me, it sounds flowery, but what does it mean?
It means they just don't want to talk about the Bible
stuff. We don't discuss
the
differences.
Stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
We agree to disagree, and we won't discuss it any further.
They've just changed what the church is into, I guess you call it a politically correct, let's be nice.
Well.
But their government is the same thing, so there's no distinction between the government and the church. It's all this liberal slop.
Yeah. One regret, William says, from looking back on his career, and he's previously admitted this, was that the Anglican Communion has failed to do more to protect the rights of gays and lesbians, and is neglecting to push for more communication and understanding between parishes split on whether or not homosexuals should be ordained.
Again, it's the secularized culture setting the agenda. That's just the case in these liberal church bodies.
And he goes on to say, if only he had intervened earlier in the Episcopal business here with Gene Robinson, perhaps the Anglican and Episcopal churches in the United States wouldn't be quite in the same disarray over that same issue.
What more can I say? It's just liberal Protestantism that you find in the ELCA, that you find in, unfortunately, the Church of Sweden, that you find in the Anglican and Episcopal churches. Although I know there are conservative alternatives within Episcopalianism.
Now, you know, they took a vote recently on women bishops in the Anglican Church, and they turned it down. And in spite of that, he says, it's clear that women are going to be bishops in the Church of England, and it's a pretty grim day for the whole church, he said, that when that was turned down.
What was the vote?
It was not significant, but it was a strong majority. I don't remember the exact numbers.
Okay. I mean, I remember when the ELCA took positions against homosexual clergy and so on. But you could see the handwriting on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, that there was even a vote. And this is what I'm seeing with that it would even come up for a vote.
Yeah.
I mean, at first it's going to lose, you know, 80-20, then it's going to lose 70-30, 60-40.
Yeah. Well, Justin Welby, who's the new guy coming in, you know, is who's going to be the new archbishop, is pushing for this.
Yeah.
And when the guy that's in charge is in favor of it, I can't imagine that, you know, it's not going to follow suit.
Yeah. So unless there's their version of a Luther come along or something to shake up, you know, I don't know what it'll take.
That's a good question. Is it time for a new Reformation?
It's always time. Semper Reformanda.
Well, we're always reforming, but yeah. It seems that we've hit a snag here. We've gotten bogged down in the mud.
Well, again, let's just do what we can, and other people do what they do.
All right. Well, tell me what I can do. This is the confusing bit here. It's one thing to say, well, we do what we can do, but what is it we're supposed to be doing?
Do the church the way it's meant to be done. Solid preaching and teaching and word and sacrament and sharing the good word with your neighbor and filling out your vocation in life honorably, being a loving person.
Well, you know, what does it matter? In 11 days, it's all going to come to an end anyway.
Oh, the Mayan thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I haven't made my preparations for that.
See, now is the time to get busy because, you know, the end is near.
Well, what about the preppers? Are they planning on this? I mean, is the Mayan thing mean everybody or just the preppers?
Everybody. Here, there's a little town in France that we talked about last week that's supposed to be the one place that will be safe. This comes out of some science fiction lore about this mountain. And the venue ranging from, let's see here, the precise manner of Armageddon remains vague, ranging from catastrophic celestial collision between Earth and a mystical planet named Nibiru, also known as Planet X, or the annihilation of civilization by a giant solar storm. It says that people in Russia are hoarding kerosene and other supplies after a certain newspaper article confirmed that this was going to happen. Novosibirsk. There's no salt because people are hoarding salt, and they're snapping up all kinds of flashlights and thermoses.
Why would they care about what the Mayans? See, there used to be these date setter Christian preachers, but I guess because they're Mayans, they're the flavor du jour. You know, I thought it was just they ran out of paper on their calendar stock, and that's why the calendar ended then. People ought to read about the Great Disappointment. William Miller, I think it was 1844. Hmm. He was one of these date-setter Christian preachers. In fact, the Seventh-day Adventists came out of that. But they all gathered, and then when the day came and went, it was called the Great Disappointment.
In China, which has no history of preoccupation with the end of the world, a wave of paranoia about the apocalypse can be traced to the 2009 Hollywood blockbuster film 2012.
Movies determining people's theology.
So it's China, it's Russia, it's Europe, it's the United States. It's everywhere.
See, Christians are ready every day. That's kind of the New Testament idea. We're ready. That's an Advent theme too, isn't it?
Yeah.
Being ready for Christmas, but for Christ's second coming.
The bidding prayer is, O come.
Yeah, yeah. O come, Emmanuel. Yeah. Ransom Israel.
They're captive Israel, yeah. And we're held captive by?
The misery that we see around us and our own sinfulness.
Our own sinfulness, yeah.
And so we're looking forward to Christ coming again. That is a major Advent theme.
Yeah, I've done a couple of programs on Studio A about why is the coming of the end of the world a bad thing?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for Christians.
Yeah.
You know, we're all, I mean.
Rejoice, lift up your head.
Yeah.
For your redemption draweth nigh.
We have an attitude where we're going to go and hide and call the mountains down upon us and try and avoid this whole thing, I guess.
Hey, Roland, I found my Santa Lucia poem.
You did? Let's hear it.
All right. We talked about Santa Lucia in the first, because of my Swedish heritage.
December 13th.
December 13th is Santa Lucia Day. And the legend was of this Italian saint, this young maiden, Lucia, coming to the frozen north during a time of famine, bringing food for the starving peasants. And she had this red sash around her white gown and candles on her head, and bringing light into the darkness and so on. And she's walking across the frozen lake there. So I wrote this. There is a Santa Lucia song, but I wrote a little parody, if I can remember the tune. Santa Lucia, I don't want to be a walking on frozen lakes is not my idea. Wearing a thin white gown, it's 15 and going down. Santa Lucia, I don't want to be a... Let's see, it goes on from there.
Good voice there, by the way.
Santa Lucia, I don't want to be a Putting fire near my hair is not my idea. Wearing a candle crown, wax melting, dripping down, Santa Lucia, I don't want to be a Santa Lucia. It's no panacea, but there is one good thing. I like your idea. Make sure I'm good and fed. Breakfast while in my bed, Santa Lucia, I'm real glad to see ya.
Bravo. Listen, Karen, good morning.
Good morning, and thank you both for all of this. I was in an area I couldn't call, but I wanted to flashback to the talking about people not knowing about Christmas. Some of my family lives up in Kansas City, and they started going to a non-denominational church that doesn't hold Christmas services. They hold Christmas service like the week before.
Unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. Christmas is for families.
Yeah.
So they don't want to interrupt that.
That's growing in popularity.
You know, every few years we get a Christmas on a Sunday, and it's interesting when churches cancel church on Sunday. It's crazy. Now yeah. Karen, you're giving me my opportunity to put in a plug for my congregations, plural. You know, Christmas, we talk about putting the Christ back into Christmas or keeping the Christ in Christmas. We need to keep the Mass in Christmas, and by the Mass, I mean the divine service, the Word and Sacrament. So, if you come down to St. Matthew Bonterre or Redeemer Potosi on December 24th or 25th, you'll get the real Christmas. So, on Monday evening, December 24th, at St. Matthew Bonterre, we have our Christmas Eve candlelight service at 7 p.m., and then I hop in the car, run over to Potosi, and we have the full-blown service with Word and Sacrament at Redeemer Potosi at 8:45, and then on Christmas morning, the real actual Christmas day, we have the Feast of the Lord's Nativity at St. Matthew and Bonterre with Word and Sacrament. So check out our websites if you're in that area, stmatthewbt.org or redeemerpotosi.wordpress.com, and you can get the schedule and information there. But you are so right, Karen. Where do you live?
I live in Dittmer, but I go to Cedarville Lutheran, and we have a Christmas Eve service, which is packed, and we have a Christmas Day service, which is but it's there.
And does it do either? Does either one of them have the Lord's Supper?
Both of them.
Good.
There you go.
That's it. You got it.
Thanks, Karen.
Thank you.
Blessed Advent. Thanks for the call. Now, Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, I guess, actually are two different festival days in the church.
So
there's nothing wrong in going both days.
Yeah, and I do two different sermons. Call me crazy, but I do two
You're
different
crazy.
Sermons.
I'm the compliant child here. I had to do that.
And one of the frustrations I have with Christmas, particularly when there's only one Sunday after Christmas, is getting all those great Christmas hymns in during the 12 days of Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
We don't sing any Christmas hymns during Advent. I forbid it.
and I are on the
Advent
same page there, because
I think
the season of Advent is a lost gift to the church.
Yeah,
because everything around you screams Christmas, Christmas, Christmas. From August on, it's all about Christmas. And this is a penitential time. This is a time to reflect and understand why this Christ child is coming and just what the gift is that comes that then leads us to give one.
But I love to do Christmas up full blast once you get to Christmas Eve. And so it's good to have service on both Christmas Eve and Christmas Day.
Does the Lutheran Church have the equivalent of a high mass for Christmas?
Well, yeah, it is called the Feast of the Nativity of the Lord, of our Lord. And really, there are three chief festivals: Christmas, the day of Christmas Day, and Easter, and Pentecost. And even when I came to parishes that didn't have every Sunday communion, and we fixed that up on Terre by now, I always insisted, no matter what day it is, we have the Lord's Supper on Christmas, Easter, and Pentecost.
Yeah, and we do the same at Ascension.
Yeah.
And also early on, that change from the old tradition of once or maybe twice a month, or it rotates on the calendar every Sunday.
Yeah, yeah.
At every
Which
service.
Which is the real tradition.
At every service. Every
that
Sunday.
Is the real tradition. Every Sunday, a major festival to have the Lord's Supper.
All right, real quick. I know you gave, you gave the plug just a moment ago, but our time is up. I'll give you the last 30 seconds as the music plays. What's the information again?
St. Matthew. St. Matthew, S-T, Matthew, B-T, one word, stmatthewbt.org for St. Matthew in Bonterre, Missouri. and Redeemer Potosi, one word, redeemerpotosi.wordpress.com.
Pastor Charles Hendrickson, thank you. Blessed Advent, and if I don't see you before then, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
All right, guys, we start with Joshua 1 tomorrow. Be prepared. There may be a quiz. See you then.
Listen to the Bible Study Monday through Friday at this same time. The Bible Study is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is needed for the Bible Study to continue. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can contact us on the web at kfuo.org. Download archives at kfuo.org. The Bible Study is heard weekdays on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.